Hello.
Good morning.
Good
Afternoon.
morning. Yes, afternoon for me.
It's so great to connect with you, Ona. I'm so thankful you accepted.
Oh, well, thank you for the invitation. Sorry about last week.
Hey, when we have to take care of ourselves, we should not have to apologize.
That
So
is
I'm thankful you
true.
were able to do that for yourself.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Welcome to the Lift Oneself podcast, Ona. I am so thankful you're here with me.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
I just want to make sure, am I saying your name correctly?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, I didn't even check in before. Can we take a breath together?
Yes, please.
Let's close our eyes and begin breathing in and out through our nose. And just watching our breath go in and out and dropping into our body. And I'm going to ask you to create an intention that you want to bring forth in the podcast. I'll ask you to create it at the pit of your stomach. And when you're ready, to release it and let it rise up into your nervous system through your stomach. Passing your lungs, your heart into your neck, and opening up into the brain, into the mind, and blossoming. While still staying focused with your breath, allowing that intention to blossom, and seeing the roots forming in the pit of your stomach, and it being connected into your being. While still watching your breath. Allowing your heart to open up and allowing that intention to be in all of your cells and for it to be in your voice while still watching your breath. And when you're ready, at your own time, gently open your eyes.
Thank you. It's beautiful.
You're welcome. How's your heart doing?
Very relaxed at the
Can you let the listeners know who Ona is?
Well, I'm many things. Currently, I work as a legal psychedelic facilitator for a place called Synthesis Retreat in the Netherlands. And I offer preparation and integration calls for people that want to experiment with psychedelics. And I'm also an illustrator and an artist. So I use these tools to integrate psychedelic experiences. So I do workshops with creative dance.
Beautiful. I know movement is a big part of the somatic and releasing those energies, those emotions, those suppressed experiences, and dance is that other form of communication that sometimes words cannot facilitate, but the expressions of our body can tell that story. So I'm so thankful for having this conversation to allow the listeners to hear a different way of doing therapy and what a healing journey is also. Can you give us a sneak peek of what allowed you to be curious about the psychedelics and to go in this path?
Well, I am originally from Barcelona, Spain, but I grew up in Mexico. So I usually took psychedelics recreationally throughout my teens. So I'm very familiar with several substances. But it wasn't until later on, actually after becoming a mother, that I realized how psychedelics had a big healing. Basically, it helped me heal in a different way. And so I've been using these substances basically for healing rather than just experimenting, recreationally and like festivals and things like that.
Yeah, the party drug that a lot of people, if they don't realize, they're opening themselves up to a lot of dimensions and a lot of internal wounds that sometimes it's a good trip and sometimes it's not so well because it depends on what emotions and energies were stored with that wound, and how you're going to open yourself up to with that. Yeah. And can you give the listeners a little bit of a walkthrough of what that looks like to partake in these healing sessions?
Well, as a facilitator, so what I usually work with psilocybin, because in the Netherlands it's legal, and it's just easier to work with because it's the safest, like say one of the safest substances out there. So I use the method that is actually the MAPS protocol. So it basically is a 1 day session, 6 to 8 hour session. And I personally use headphones and eye shades, and this helps the person go more within. And I use intention setting. So just like your meditation, I personally, and even at Synthesis, we do the same kind of method. A person decides on an intention they want to work in or on, and then we help them kind of like sit with that intention for a couple weeks and kind of go into their journey with this intention. And then after that, we help them, you know, with integrating this intention or the whatever came out in the journey into their daily life. So it's not just like a 1 day of like this strange experience that you don't know how can you apply this in your daily life. So it's actually, yeah, a full day of, you know, going through several emotions. Some can be challenging, some can be more, you know, ecstatic or joyous. So as a facilitator, we are there to help guide. So not guide in a way of like, I'm telling you what to do. It's just like, I'm sitting there next to you, helping you whenever it is that you need help. Because the substances can make you feel a bit dizzy. So if someone needs to go to the bathroom, we accompany them and not go into the bathroom, but we stay close. So the idea is to protect the person in anything that they need, emotionally, physically, and just being present there helps people let go of certain fears.
And I appreciate you explaining that, because I think what I want to bring forth is for people to know that this is sacred ground, mm-hmm. and you're opening yourself up to vulnerability that you haven't been connected with in a depth. And so to be with somebody that you can trust yourself with, mm-hmm. them is really important to allow a depth of healing to occur with these sessions. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a lot of people won't take into consideration all the different things. They just think, oh, you sit and you trip. And it's like, no, there's other factors. Like you could be dizzy, or you could start vomiting, or the fear can be very palpable where, you know, your heart racing. So having somebody to guide you to use your breath to regulate your system is really important. So that's what that guidance is giving you the ability of empowerment, that you're able to ride these waves of feelings, of emotions that you may not have ever felt before. And, you know, I really appreciate hearing that. And for the listeners to hear that also, to get a glimpse of what that is. Cause a lot of people think, oh, I'm just going to trip out and it's going to be ecstatic. And it's like, it's not all like it's end in both. There's a lot of different things that go on in sessions. Mm-hmm. And depending on the intention that you set forth, our mind is there to serve us. So if you're ready to do the work, ready to be that warrior to go within and, you know, connect back into a deeper love within yourself, it will facilitate that for you. Yet some of that journey may have a storm. And for me, how I see it is that you're like a light post, always reminding people where that love is and guiding them back within themselves and not trying to reach for that control. Because for me, that healing journey, there's a lot of uncertainty that you have to navigate in that we're not used to as humans. We always want certainty, but not realizing we're always in uncertainty. Like there is nothing that is certain. Have you done any of these healing sessions for yourself?
Yes, of course. That's the main reason why I can facilitate. I actually have done many sessions for myself. Actually, my husband was a participant for the MAPS MDMA trial, assisted psychotherapy. And that's how it all started in terms of using these substances as healing substances. So I saw the change in my husband. He was suffering from PTSD. And so we both kind of went really into the safety protocols that MAPS has and studied them deeply, and then started experimenting with ourselves. Like basically I would trip sit for him, and it's called trip sitting, but it's it's really just you know, being there for the other person. And then he would do it for me, especially when my daughter turned 2 years old. The transformational twos are terrible twos. I basically went back into postpartum depression, mm-hmm. and I had a lot of anxiety due to my husband's PTSD triggers. So I was basically diagnosed with depression and anxiety, and I was given antidepressants. I never actually took them. I was given the prescription for antidepressants, and I decided that's not the path I wanted to take. So I experimented with psilocybin or dry magic mushrooms in Canada. Still, it's not legal, but I still wanted to do it for myself. So I've done many, many sessions, including with MDMA and other substances for myself, with specific playlists that are catered to inner journeys. So always with either my husband or someone I trust by my side. So once I kind of touched the grounds and understood how things kind of navigate in these, you know, realms, then I started offering this to my friends. And slowly, you know, I opened up and did retreats myself first for small groups of people, or even like one-on-one. We've even facilitated my husband and myself to one person, because it can be very healing to have like the masculine and feminine energy. So it's been like 6 years that I've actually been practicing as a facilitator. So, and also in myself, of course.
Can you explain a little bit for some listeners what that trauma bond, what that trauma looks like in relationships, and how to navigate through that when your triggers are activated because of your partner's explosions or experience, like that projection, mm-hmm. and that, I guess, a bit of codependency too with that trauma. Can you explain how you guys navigated those rough waters and what, mm-hmm. you know, what tools you used?
Yeah, well, I mean, at first I didn't know much about mental health. I didn't know, I wasn't even considering psychedelics as a potential to help with this until he was diagnosed with PTSD, started reading about it. I didn't even know I had what a depression was. I mean, I kind of knew, but I wasn't like really understanding how that looked like in myself, or even anxiety. I just thought I've always been like this. So what is this? No. So, I mean, it's been a journey, right? It didn't start easy. It's been very challenging. There has been a lot of dark moments. Luckily, because he's very interested in psychedelics as well, we've also been able to do psychedelics together to heal certain aspects of those triggers and the fights that has happened because of his PTSD and my anxiety. So we've actually used the substance called MDMA, which opens up the heart quite a bit, and been able to talk about certain things and forgive each other for certain things that we've gone through. And, you know, we all have ups and downs, and we're still working on it. But I think that the psychedelic work has helped us kind of see things in a different perspective, mm-hmm. and soften that harsh shell. So like slowly, you know, kind of have more empathy for each other, understand that, you know, our traumas don't define us, and they're not who we truly are inside. So kind of just like giving that perspective, but can also be you can reach that perspective doing breath work or meditation or things like that. But I just feel the psychedelic substances bring like another level of awareness.
Yeah, I think it also probably allows you to be with the vulnerability, which we usually armor our vulnerability because we've been hurt so much, or we've been harmed and hurt when vulnerability has been shown. So we armor it up and we don't feel safe to expose it because of what the experiences occurred before. And I really appreciate you explaining that relationships are work. Humaning is work. So just imagine how you treat yourself and and then to be with another person and be committed to be in those rough waters and to, you know, help guide each other and help, you know, facilitate that safe space of opening up your heart, yet holding those boundaries of accountability that you have to be accountable for your own actions, though. Like these behaviors that we're doing to each other, we have to mature out of these and not be in the habit forming that we have, you know, generated through decades. That, you know, that's what for myself, how I see partnership and relationships. It's not always how I explain it, unicorns pooping out rainbows all the time. Relationships are work. Like humaning is work. So I thank you for, you know, really being transparent with that and letting people know, because I think, you know, unfortunately, social media has done a lot of distortion and people are only seeing happy couples and happy this and happy that, yet people are not really exposing the days in and day out of what a relationship really looks like, what communication looks like, and listening looks like. That's the crux of what a relationship is, to really communicate honestly and to allow yourself to listen to the person, not what your judgments and what you are creating as a scenario, not creating. Because I think what I just heard somebody, I have to look at his name to quote him. He said it perfectly. What we usually do is we listen to understand rather than have compassion at the beginning to have understanding. We usually need understanding to have compassion. Yeah, we're to have compassion to reach understanding, which is very difficult to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you do your inner work, it's easier to do that, or at least just to listen. You know, like, I mean, I'm studying Gestalt therapy. I don't know if you're familiar with it. So it actually is helping me a lot with my facilitation, because it is literally that. It's just listening. And some people actually in our retreats share that it's more like how we present ourselves as facilitators and just listen without judgment. That's even more powerful than the substance itself.
Yeah. I get that a lot from, like, there's something in my nervous system that helps another person feel that co-regulation. Mm-hmm. So they're able to be in that vulnerability. And I've heard it all throughout my life since I've been a kid. I don't know why I'm telling you this. It's the first time I've ever shared this with somebody. And I just know, and I honor the gift of allowing people to really connect in their honesty. And when you can do that, you know, the expression I get from people is, I feel like there's a weight that has come off of me. I feel like something just slid off and I'm able to move more freely. Mm-hmm. And it's a somatic release. And I think I've not personally ever done mushrooms. I did LSD when I was a teen. So I, you know, did those psychedelics, I think like maybe five times, a handful of times. Yet the mushrooms I never did. Yet from what I hear of people's experiences, it's that liberation of, you know, just being honest with our feelings, our emotions, our thoughts, and not being so not being identified with them, recognizing that their energy and their feelings and they pass through. And that can be challenging to release that identity that we've created for ourselves and navigate through that. Is there any Are there any tools that you would offer to people navigating through like trauma and PTSD in their everyday life?
Well, I mean, the first thing is recognizing what triggers you, you know, so like, I don't know, me as an anxious person, like I actually am learning now to really be in my body, right? So people that suffer from triggers or people that suffer from PTSD, depression, anxiety, or I mean, even any chronic illness, the body really knows, right? So for instance, if I am having like some issues with my daughter, or she's being very emotional, which she has the right to be emotional, but it's triggering me emotionally. Like I'm not able, like I'm going to lose it, you know, like I'm like, why? It's, you know, I guess you understand me.
Oh, I have twins.
Yeah, I know you do. So I guess you get it. So, yeah. You know, just take a moment, you know, obviously breathe really deeply, like not like, or you have two options, to breathe really deeply or really just to vent, like be like, you know, to regulate your body or whatever works for you. Like sometimes I'll just literally put my hand in ice water. Mm-hmm. And then my body's like, whoa, okay. You know, there's different coping, like stuff that people can do, but figuring out what works for you. Like, I don't know, maybe it's screaming to a pillow, like simple things that you can do, or just literally like dancing it out, things, little tools like that, that you have to be your own. Like you have to figure out what
mad scientist. Yeah. I call it a mad scientist to really.
Exactly.
Find out.
But, you know, what really helps me is actually feeling what my body is trying to say. So, like, lately, it's really obvious. Like, I'll get, like, this trembling sensation from my uterus, like, all over to my chest. And then I'm like, oh, okay, wait, I have to time out. And same with our fights. Like, if we are fighting or we're having a disagreement with my husband, it's better to just be like, look, I don't think either of us are regulated at the moment. Let's just take a moment or an hour, or like, let's discuss this another day, because we're just going to start arguing and saying stuff that we don't want to say to each other. So kind of just like figuring out what helps you feel like at peace, basically. Like, I'm not telling you to do like a 1 hour meditation session, but like what helps you? Maybe it's just like changing your perspective and watching a funny video, you know, like cats doing crazy stuff, whatever it is, you know, but that helps you. And obviously you have to start learning to discover how that trigger feels in your body. And then, you know, like not feel guilty if you fucked up, honestly, like if you couldn't handle it and you had to yell or you did something, and then like, what's worse? Just like letting it go and be like, look, I'm human. I fucked up. I'm sorry. I've done this with my daughter many times. Look, I'm sorry. I got nervous. I yelled. I shouldn't have yelled. I'm sorry. And then we say this, actually, the Ho'oponopono. I don't know if you're familiar with it. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. And then just don't feel guilty, because that's just going to put more pressure, more stress, more anxiety in your life. So just be like, I'm human and it's okay.
Yeah, I'm infamous of calling my BS out and allowing myself to be human. And the twins will, you know, they have every right to call out my BS too, because then they're like, oh, mom's in her mode. Okay, we're not going to listen to you. Please don't start yelling. Oh, mom, don't. And it's like, I'm like, I should know better. It's been 8 years now that I've been doing this. And it's like, yet it's those triggers and those deep triggers. And when they activate, it's like, okay, I know the tools, and I honor the maturity of going through it and allowing that I'm human. And some waves are just, I'm going to drown in them. And I have to have that compassion and grace for myself. And I think the main point for myself with my three boys, because I have a 27-year-old and then the twins are 12, is taking that accountability of my side of the road. Like I yelled because I could not tolerate your high energy or what you guys were doing because there was some kind of narration. So it validates them in their journey and that they don't internalize everything that, oh, I'm wrong, that mom was this way or whatnot, that it's like, I'm actually a human being and you have to allow to see me as a human being and not just as super mom, because I am not super mom. I am a human being. And what I appreciate, I want to go back to what you said about the relationship and arguments.
Yeah.
What people won't realize, or what, if they're willing to discover, trauma is like junk food and it loves to find ways to argue, to vent, to become violent, to blame, to shame, to guilt, to feel all those emotions. And it feels like you're getting somewhere. Yet if you really look at the crux of it, where are the solutions? It's just a lot of banter going back and forth of really just offloading and not really being able to communicate. So I thank you for bringing that up and highlighting, you know, for people to, I was going to say, like, create safe words that all of a sudden, if we recognize we're triggered, as much as it's going to pull us to want to keep arguing, we have to find those safe words to back away because we're going to harm ourselves more than do any solution based of, you know, finding, remembering that we're both on the same team. Because when trauma gets activated, you feel like you're enemies and you're against each other and you're forgetting that you're both on the same side. You're both on the same team. So thank you for explaining that. Because
I think I would just like to add about the safe word. It's actually funny. I was talking to my colleagues in my Gestalt training about it. And I just think it's very important because when we're in this trigger and just like, basically arguing, no, my trauma is better than your trauma, or I'm like, you don't even know what the fuck's going on. Sorry for my language.
No, it's okay.
And then, so my husband and I came out with a word, right? That wouldn't basically, like, for example, so what happens is if I leave, my husband feels abandoned because he has PTSD and everything. And then if he starts, you know, being loud, then my anxiety, my depression start going into a loop. So we decided we would just say like, okay, I'm going to go get sushi, right? So sushi is our safe word. So if I say that, or he says that, he understands it has nothing to do with him or me, or like me wanting to abandon him or like anything. It's just like, I'm not at the capacity to fight right now. And I just need to remove myself. So it's very important, I think, for especially for couples that might be arguing, to have a word that is not going to be personal, nothing. It's just going to be like, okay, you're overloaded right now. You need to take some air and it's fine.
I want to bring forth, because sometimes when we're in this healing, we forget. What you guys have done is identified what your triggers are. So he feels abandoned when you do certain actions. So he had to be vulnerable to explain that to you.
Yeah.
And you had to be vulnerable to explain to him, when you start yelling, my anxiety starts going. So that is a part of the healing to, even though it I know intellectually and mature wise and age, why would I be feeling it's so childish or whatever storyline that has no bearing, and you have to remove that from your language. It is a sensation. It is in the root of your programming, and you have to honor that. You have to be able to integrate it and validate it, because once you validate and acknowledge, it dissipates. But the more you ignore it, the more it builds up and creates all these storylines and narrations. So that was really, you know, important for any listeners that are listening. The communication is being able to be vulnerable to explain, when you do certain actions, this is how I actually feel, which I know has nothing to do with you and it's my responsibility. Yet when we're in this, this is how I feel. And I'm looking for a sacred space where we can heal this and I can communicate this and I can mature it. Yet I need somebody that will honor that safety and that honesty, that they'll honor it. So thank you for, you know, explaining that, because these are little things that people don't realize that, oh, this is what my trigger. And it's like, yeah, triggers are not going to go away. They're going to pop up. And sometimes a trigger may not be there. And 10 years later, boop, it comes back and it's like, what? I thought you were gone. And it's like, things don't leave. Life has different challenges and experiences that are going to unearth things. And then you just come to see, oh, hi, old friend, and how are we going to navigate through this? And what are we going to learn? And learning to integrate and be one in a whole as a W with it all, which is a lot of work. And so for people, you know, there is no, for me, how I have defined healing is being able to shift my perception, which is the most challenging thing to do. Your state of mind, your state of mind is your own responsibility and it's powerful, yet to dredge out all that stuff and be able to shift your perception, a lot of work. And to shift it, not with that toxic positivity that I feel a lot of people do, to shift it with, I'm allowing myself to feel and taking the responsibility to shift. So not just shift and act like nothing happened and not honor what my body is feeling or what the experience was. It's end in both, feeling what I'm feeling and making the choice to shift. And sometimes I'm successful with it and sometimes I'm still learning with it. And so, you know, gathering your toolbox. And what I want to, you know, put forth is that there's nothing wrong with people. I really want that stigma to be removed from society and recognize, you know, what happened to you and what really is going on internally for you to acknowledge it and to allow there to be a kindness for and an honoring of your experience. And also just know that there is no arrival point. It's a journey. So,
Exactly.
We're all walking each other home and we can forget that. And that's what's so important is when the mind wants to arrive somewhere to break that, because you're going to end up in some place where you're going to loop, because it's always a journey and it's a process and to allow yourself to be human. In a world that nobody wants people to be human, it's like, allow yourself to be human.
Exactly.
And I want to just also, I would hope that in your training too, it's to allow people to recognize, you know, when I say in my meditations to come into your body, I understand also that it can feel a threat to people, because going into your body, you were harmed. So it's really difficult to come back into your body. And so when people are like, I it's uncomfortable, and it's like, that is awesome that you recognize that, because those are the steps to face whatever it is that makes it uncomfortable to trust your body, to come back into your body. Can you explain, do you facilitate that for people and explain that to people?
Yeah. I mean, we also do breathwork sessions, which are very much going back into the body. And obviously the substances actually make you go into the body, even if you don't want it. Like, some people do experience shaking, some people do experience trembling or different things like that. So that's, as facilitators, it depends on the situation. If it's too extreme and we recognize that whatever the body is releasing is actually a looping, then we'll do an intervention of some sort to basically let the person relax, because, you know, the looping can also be damaging to the body. But usually, if there is, like, for example, if you're taking it can happen in breathwork, and then you cramp your hands, you know, like that's your mind trying to control. So as a facilitator, for example, I'm not just going to go and like open your hand, because maybe that's what happened to you. Someone forced you. So like, maybe gently, I'll just like put my hand like this, you know, make it like around your hand and make it like warm. And then slowly, you know, like kind of like, it's just re-educating what your body can feel. And then I'll stop touching your hand, because after all, you know. So the substance is not like, it's just reminding you that you can be safe. So as a facilitator, I mean, a conscious facilitator, a good facilitator is not going to like force anything. No. So it's just basically going to remind you that whatever your body experienced, yes, it's hard. Yes, it's complicated. And your mind trying to control this not happening, you know, can be re-educated in a different way. You know, it can be gently caressed, like meaning just held, not like, you know, we're totally like boundaries in that sense.
Yeah.
But it can be, you know, you can find this kindness in a different way in your body. And like, I don't know if you're familiar, probably yes, with Dr. Gabor Mate.
And oh, like, love him.
Other books that explain this. And I myself have definitely experienced this. And the body knows, right? So the body would know where it has to release. So if someone is like shaking, we let that shaking happen because it's the body letting go of something that no longer serves. So some people like would get really scared if something like that happens. And then that's us where we come in and just be like, it's okay, you're safe. We're here to hold you, you know, like we're here to be next to you and there's nothing that you have to fear. And then once this like stage of shaking goes away, then they can, you know, relax and go back into their journeys.
Thank you. Thank you for the explanation. So people have a visual of understanding to come back into trusting their body and allowing their body to release whatever energies that have been suppressed in there.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a fight with the mind, the limbic system, because it's trying to take what was before in the past and bring it into the now, or, you know, trying to find certainty in the future, where it's like to be in this moment. It takes a lot of work to be in the moment and not be in that past and future realm with that limbic system, which you have to honor. Because I know it can be very frustrating. It can be, why am I a prisoner? Yet the quicker you allow yourself to befriend it, the more it will disarm itself and learn to trust where you're bringing it and where you're navigating with it. Last week, we had scheduled the podcast. However, there was an emergency. You had to go to seek medical assistance. Can you let the listeners know a little bit of what you experienced and the reflection you had in that experience?
Yeah. So a few years ago, I was diagnosed with something called interstitial cystitis, which is a chronic, painful bladder condition. So basically what it is, if the listeners have ever experienced a bladder infection, it's a bladder infection forever. So a few years ago, I was diagnosed. So I was taking medication. I was basically, they would introduce a special medication into my bladder, and then it would create like a special like cover, because my bladder is like, basically has like little veins and stuff. So any liquid that comes into contact with the bladder, I would feel it like as pain. So it took many years, and actually psychedelics were part of my healing for this condition. And I also changed my diet. Basically, I changed. I don't eat processed foods or any of that. And then like, that's like a really long story. But in summary, basically, I had been in remission due to all my work with psychedelics and just like changing my lifestyle, doing meditation and movement through dance. And actually, even when I got pregnant, then it went fully in remission to the point I wasn't taking any medication for this illness, even though I was told that this wasn't possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they wanted to keep me, you know, with the medications and stuff. So it has been like 8 years or 6 years that I had been in remission, and I have had certain relapses after fights, for example, if I was very stressed or if we had a complicated season, and then I would have a relapse. And by relapse, I mean like the pain would just come back. And usually they give me antibiotics and it's all good. And then it's just like a bladder infection. But last week, it was a bladder infection, and it obviously I took antibiotics and it helped. But because I guess I've been working a lot with my body, and I've been doing a lot of therapy, and I've been training as a gestalt therapist, the memory came back of those years, like extremely, like it was so intense, like, because I hadn't worked this specific topic, you know, in my therapy. So I was like, it was not just the pain. It was just the fear, like everything, the fear of being disabled, the fear of not being able to control it, the body really basically not allowing me to have a normal life. That was what I had, right? I couldn't have a normal life. I couldn't go to the movies. I couldn't even sleep because I had to wake up every 45 minutes to go to the bathroom. So actually, interesting enough, this weekend I had a training with my colleagues, and a friend of mine helped me navigate this kind of like, why did it happen? What's going on? And the reality is that I realized that like my body still has something it needs to work on. And in this past months, I've gone through a lot of emotional roller coasters, and my body realized, you know, like you still have some work to do there. And it's hard to accept, you know, that this is just gonna happen, or it could happen. But I see it as like, it's like my bladder is actually a superhero, because it's telling me that there's something there, either like emotionally, physically, or even like, did you eat something that is not good for you, right? Like, because I had some, you know, I went to holidays and I had like some stuff I shouldn't have. So in a way, it's like, I used to think as this pain as like, I'm resenting it, and I don't want it, and it's not part of me, and I want it away. And now I see it as in, okay, this is also me. Like, I'm also pain. I'm also like all this suffering. And I realized that this specific condition, it is a physical thing, because obviously there are, you know, you can see my bladder in a scan, and it is, you know, broken, and if you will. Mm-hmm. But it's very emotional, because the bladder is like, it usually is related to lack of acceptance. And I realized that I haven't been accepting certain parts of my life. So it's like, wow, the body just is reminding me that, right? So yeah, some people really feel that. And the reason why this illness lasted so long was because I was in a victim phase. And the moment I changed my mindset and started saying like, this cannot be my life, and I started owning myself and saying, I am not a victim, that's when things started to change for me. And same goes here. If I would have stayed in the loop of being a victim last week, then I wouldn't be talking to you today either.
Yeah. I think I want to just highlight to people what victim can look like is being angry. And yeah. Pushing away the experience of what you're experiencing and thinking, I don't deserve this. And I want, yeah. Rather than questioning, what is this trying to tell me, and how mm-hmm. can I move forward? It mm-hmm. may not look like it was at one time, yet I can adapt. And that's what humans are. That's what resilience is about adapting. Mm-hmm. It's about change. And so thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing that with the listeners so that they can get a sneak peek of what that inner work looks like. Yeah. And how we think, you know, like, that's why I say there's no arrival, because you're going to see that mm-hmm. there's more and more depth all the time of it. It's like layers of an onion, and you take off one layer and you're like, oh yeah. And then there's more and there's more and there's more. Yet the mm-hmm. more you do the work, you snap back much quicker, and you feel a sense of expansion and abundance mm-hmm. of wow, of really being interconnected with all of the frequencies and energies and, you know, accepting your life. So thank you for honoring us with that intimate vulnerability, because it helps listeners to hear what their journey and validate some listeners too of, oh, it's not in my head like this. And it's like, no, this is what it actually feels like and what you could be.
And actually, it's just like, it was so hard for me in the beginning of my illness, if you will, because I was literally going to the hospital every week and they would just be like, you have a bladder infection. I'm like, I can't have bladder infection every week. That's just not possible. And until this was like for 3 months. And then I was like, okay, doctors are not helping. So I actually Googled it. I'm like, what's going on? Like, you know, I know I took 3 months. Okay, that might seem long, but one time I was in the waiting room with another patient and she was saying that she had been suffering for 6 years undiagnosed. And I think that this is the importance, and it's related also with the psychedelic use. We have to take things into our own hands, because the doctors are not having all the solutions. They're not also going to provide all the things we need to heal. So we need to figure out what is wrong with us and what can we do about it. And this literally was me again stepping outside of this victim. And basically, you describe it very well, but for me, a little bit on top of that means victim means putting everything on you, you know, or everybody else, you know, like everything is, the world's against me. But stepping outside of this victim mode is actually putting yourself and be like, I'm going to own this. And around me, yes, it affects me, but I can change it. And that's what's important.
And for the listeners, I know this might be triggering to some people, yet if you understand psychology, what Ona just explained is when we're kids, we're very narcissistic and we think everything revolves around us. And so that's why we get into these identity of victim. Like I just explained about with my children, and when I yell, they think they're responsible for me yelling and my state of mind and in my emotions. And so that victim mode is a sense of narcissistic that, well, everything's happening to me and I can't get out of this and poor me and all this kind of stuff, where it's being able to use different sets of questions. And we haven't been really introduced to introduce different sets of questions to empower ourselves, to take responsibility, to see what accountability is. I mirror you. I 8 years ago, I kept going to the ER and I kept being told I had the flu. And I said, if I was having the flu, I will take 10 flu shots every year. I am an invalid. I am stuck in my bed. I have extreme pain. I'm vomiting. I haven't had a bowel movement in 6 weeks. This is not, I went to the ER 5 times to the point where, yet I learned don't go to the ER on weekends because nobody listens to you.
Exactly.
Don't go to the ER on weekends. I went on my 4 times. And then on my 5th time, I was there in the day. All of a sudden, oh, you have lesions in your brain. You might have cancer. We're going to admit you. And I stayed in the hospital for almost 40 days. So, you know, when they admit, and I still don't have a diagnosis to this day. And I went through, you know, biopsies. I even got radiation put into me into the amount where they said I would have to carry a letter if I wasn't in the hospital, because I would be setting off borders and everything else. And they would be inquiring if I would be a terrorist because I had that much radiation in me. And I was like, are we supposed to stay away from radiation? And they're like, well, science is kind of funny. Sometimes we need it to find our diagnoses and things that we need to look for. So in that, I marry you because I had to advocate for myself a lot. And when you're sick, it's really difficult to find that energy to have a voice when, you know, you have a wall of people saying no and not listening to you. And to have that trust within yourself to find the things. And, you know, I had, thankfully, I discovered meditation in my journey early on. And, you know, I'm here. I know that is one of the things that has me here, because they thought I'd be an invalid. I wouldn't be able to drive. I wouldn't, they didn't have a long, healthy, expectant life for me. And so, and when I get my relapses and when pain is there, it's like you said, there's still parts where I have to integrate. I haven't fully had acceptance. I haven't fully released this sense of wanting to belong places. a sense of abandonment, a sense of fear, the traumas and everything else. It's like you do a lot of work, yet there's still, you know, I think it's more maintenance and just reminders that, you know, you're not, for me, how I see it, it's a reminder to still be in touch with humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And to still be able to relate to others and be reminded, mm-hmm. like, you remember when you were in bed for weeks and weeks and in pain and nobody could have an answer for you, and mm-hmm. it debilitating. So, and remembering, you know, what that looks like and showing a different light. So thank you. Like mm-hmm. your message is the same as mine too, is, mm-hmm. you know, the medical system is only as good as it is. I think mm-hmm. it's lost a lot of its sacred work. And it has become very profitable now. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to start to return back into that sacred, because that's where we're getting a lot of functional medicine now, because it never made, like, even when I was in the hospital, I had 5 different teams and they weren't communicating with each other. And I was like, how is my thyroid not communicating with my heart, but it's not communicating with this? And these guys are, oh, it's the thyroid or it's the heart. And it's like, why aren't you guys talking together and not mm-hmm. trying to, because my body is not communicating. So it needs to learn to communicate again. Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing that also, because it can be mm-hmm. very infuriating. And I'm sure there's some listeners that have gone through this medical journey and they're not listened to, and they're mm-hmm. made that it's all in their head and not finding, you know, well, what really is, because if you look in the medical system, they're not listening to your story. They're not listening to your lifestyle. They're not listening to what you've experienced, which has a significant impact with the body. Mm-hmm. I'm mindful of time. I'm going to bring you into a reflective question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you to bring this awareness and go back to your 18-year-old self. And mm-hmm. you have 3 words to tell your 18-year-old self. It can be in a way of a phrase or just 3 individual words to bring you along the journey to now.
So many possibilities. I think the most important would be trust your intuition and listen to your body, definitely. And the last one, don't let others' opinions of who you are affect you to the level that you feel sad and lonely and not part of the whole.
Is there anything you would like to leave the listeners?
Well, with those 3 sentences. But I would like to say that don't be scared. Nowadays, social media can be so, you know, perfect, as you put it. Don't be scared to be yourself. We need voices, especially moms, women. It's the time. My husband is Iranian, and there's a lot of things going on right now in Iran. And I believe that men are stepping up and also voicing, but I think we have a power here as women, and we should just really show what we can show and let the world know that we're not gonna just give up on ourselves and community.
Where can the listeners find you?
Social media, Ona Praderas, and the same with my website, onapraderas.com.
I want to thank you for being so open with your intimacy and vulnerability and having such a heart-open conversation. I want to ask you, can you share what your intention was in the meditation?
Oh, I just forgot it. No, it was to inspire hope.
And I know that you did that throughout the whole conversation. You shared your own personal journey, which sparks hope, because it's not just a theory. It's not just what textbooks say. It's actual lived experience. So it's your lived word. It's your prayer to others. So thank you for sharing that with everybody.
Well, thank you for allowing me to share it.
Remember to be kind to yourself.
Yeah, you too.
Hey, thank you for making it all the way to the end. I appreciate you and your time. If you found anything of value in this conversation, please share it out. Let's start growing the conversations and dialogue surrounding healing and mental health. Please like and subscribe to our podcast on many of the platforms so you can be informed when there's new ones coming out. If you have any questions or suggestions, please send us an email at liftoneself@gmail.com. Until next time, please remember to be kind with yourself.